This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
At least today, unlike prior, the bowl games come with colleges you have heard of. Nebraska and Utah, I can buy it. Michigan and Texas? Okay. I mean, that's a bargain for a Wednesday afternoon. Quote, Coastal and Appalachian State. I mean, I'm sorry. December 28th and 9th or 30th, too close to the sun. That's just too close to New Year's for those matchups. Get them out of the way earlier next year. I got all the answers over here. Happy New Year. Thanks for listening. Always a pleasure to welcome Dan Leberfeld, Jets Confidential, to the show on the West Her Hotline. Dan, Happy New Year to you. It is, at least in terms of the regular season, the last game ever out at the stadium. I figure you and I probably met there, however long ago that was, maybe 25 plus years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember the first time we met exactly. I know... We worked together a little in Rochester on the writing front, but I'm sure the first time we actually met in person was probably at a game, no doubt about it.
Do you have any particular memories of our stadium?
Well, I always liked the herd of stats. That was always good.
Yes.
They always handed out these massive packs of stats, the great PR department of the Bills. The hospitality was always great in the press box. The old one, the new one, Western New York charm. The food was always solid. I want to say great, but I never like to complain because it's free in the press box. I remember the Larry Felser seat in the old press box. Remember the Larry Felser seat? They kept an old nice chair in the middle of the press box in honor of the great Buffalo News sports writer. So, man, I've been there a lot of times. There's no doubt about it, a lot of good memories.
By the old press box, you mean like midfield, not the one in the corner,
yeah,
like now?
Yeah, the midfield. If the fans don't know, for the uninitiated, the press box used to be on the 50-yard line pretty low. It was one of the best vantage points of any press box in the NFL. But then the Bills, like a lot of the other teams, got smart and said, you know what, we can build luxury boxes right there. Let's put the ink-stained wretches in the end zone.
In those years, it's kind of like one of the only windows throughout the history of these two franchises where they were both pretty good, like the late 90s. Testaverde and Flutie. There were a couple of years there, one in particular, 98, I think, where it was a big game late in the season here that the Jets won. But, you know, I guess it's not entirely a coincidence, Dan, that for much of their last 50 or even their entire history, 60 plus years, not often have these two teams been good at the same time.
No, that's a really good point when you think about the histories, and the Jets have that dubious distinction. I believe they're tied with the Sabres in this regard. I'm sure you bring it up every once in a while. 15 years sitting out the playoffs. I can't believe I haven't covered a playoff game in 15 years. I often joke with my radio partner on Sirius XM NFL Radio, Vic Carucci. I go, Vic, what's it like to cover a playoff game? I mean, 15 years, I haven't been in a, I'm not complaining, and I enjoy my job, even though it's not a good team. I feel blessed to be able to cover an NFL team and go to press boxes and stadiums and locker rooms. But I can't believe it's been 15 years since I've been in a press box covering an NFL playoff game.
I feel much the same about hockey, like you mentioned. And they keep adding playoff teams, Dan, and it's still not enough. So one of these years, but it was the AFC Championship after the 2010 season. The Jets lose in Pittsburgh, and then it's Aaron Rodgers Packers beating the Steelers in the Super Bowl that year. That's the last appearance the Jets have made in the playoffs. Dan, it's something, yeah, in terms of the Sabres or even the Bills before Sean McDermott, 17 years in a row. It's something you can really just talk about at length and try to understand. It's not easy to understand. Is it understandable or close enough to that word how the Jets continue to languish like they have? And I wonder, too, if you'd think this is maybe a new low point.
Yeah, this is pretty low. There's no doubt about it. The last month has been, the quality of football has been so low. I haven't seen it at this level in a long time. Blowout after blowout, blown coverage after blown coverage. I mean, I'm covering these games, and you saw some of the highlights where you're playing the New Orleans Saints. Chris Olave is their number one receiver, an emerging star for New Orleans. Wide open behind the secondary for two touchdowns. How does that happen in the NFL? Meaning that obviously star receivers are going to get open and they're going to catch passes, they're going to catch touchdowns. But Chris Olave wide open behind the secondary twice against the Jacksonville Jaguars, Travis Etienne, three touchdowns receiving out of the backfield, wide open all three times. Once again, people make excuses. They're playing a lot of backups. There's injuries on defense. I don't think this defense was particularly good before the injuries, and even with backups. I mean, you see it in Buffalo, and I'll talk about Buffalo as far as obviously they have the quarterback, they have a good head coach, and they have a good coaching staff because recently, twice recently, they had rough first halves dealing with the opposing offense, Philadelphia and New England. Look at the adjustments. I know fans like to ask, and we like to ask, what halftime adjustments did you make? And some people minimize them. I think they're important. So when you look at the halftime adjustments by the Bills against Jalen Hurts and against Drake May, I'm not seeing a lot of good adjustments being made, and I just don't understand, even if you're playing backups, that gets me back to the Bills, because how many times have Bills starters been out on defense, and they're still a solid defense? And the backup safety or the backup corner is not blowing the coverage in the zone concept. I mean, they played zone concepts in college, these kids, right? They've been with the team for 3 months during the regular season and the offseason. Why can't they play basic zone coverage, Mike?
Well, I don't know if I would know the answer to that. Is it an effort thing? Have they tuned out the coach? Is it just that the players are not at a base sort of level of quality or both?
No, I don't think the issue, and I've written a few blogs about it this week, I don't think the issue is effort or heart or any of that stuff. I know people like to go down that road when this stuff's going on, and a lot of the post-game shows after the Jets' recent loss to New England, effort was brought up. Even the coach brought it up, but he backtracked the next day. It's not an effort thing. I see guys flying around. A bunch of guys got hurt last week. They're flying around. They're trying hard. On defense in particular, they need probably 6 or 7 new starters, and I'm not embellishing. There are players that probably wouldn't be on other teams in certain cases. There are players that make the same mistakes over and over again, and a couple of them aren't even rookies or undrafted guys. The two inside linebackers continue to not read their keys properly in coverage, Jamien Sherwood and Quincy Williams, out of position all the time. ATN beat Quincy Williams on all three touchdown catches. So those are players they inherited. So I think there's two issues. They made some personnel issues with the players they added in the draft after the first round and the second round. That was pretty good. But after that, undrafted free agents, street free agents, they made some mistakes. And some of the players they brought back, this is the more damning thing. Some of the players they brought back I don't know what film they were looking at from the prior regime and the prior season. And I'm not acting like I know how to break down film anywhere near these guys do. But I'm telling you, there's certain players that they brought back that they shouldn't have brought back. The film doesn't lie, and these guys should not have been part of the new regime. I don't know what film they were looking at from last season.
With Dan Leberfeld, you know, when we do talk about, you mentioned already, like, I bet you bring this up from time to time, the Sabres comparison, and you're right, we do. And with the Sabres, I think, well, you know, I've got, at times I've had a good roster, or not a good roster, but not a terrible one, but I've got a team that's sort of just in shambles, and it sometimes doesn't make sense. And what I end up thinking of sometimes or pointing to is just a lack of credibility within the organization that doesn't lend itself to bringing out players' best. Like, I don't know if I have, if I want to, maybe subconsciously even, Dan, give everything I've got to this because I just don't believe in it. And could that be a real thing with the Jets? I mean, it's been so long, the issue of the owner and his kids and just sort of who's in charge of what. And I don't know. It seems like the kind of franchise from out here on, you know, from afar that I could imagine players checking out on.
Well, I think that sometimes if you're a player and you don't think some of the coaches are giving you the best chance to win with the scheming, like we're talking before about the halftime adjustments against Philadelphia and against New England for Sean McDermott and his staff. If the Jets ran two fake punts on one series last week, who does that? And that's the kind of thing where the players are like, what's going on here? And so some of it's X's and O's, some of it's player personnel. The roster is really bad now, but people were quick to point out this week about all the backups the Jets were playing in that Patriots game. You know, the Patriots without eight key players, two starting defensive linemen, two starting linebackers, the left side of their offensive line was out, and also
two receivers.
You know, well, Hollins, I didn't want to say two starters at receiver because Hollins was out. I believe he starts. You guys know him well in Buffalo. And Boutte, I don't think Boutte starts, but he's playing well. So eight key players were out. So I don't want to hear about how the Jets had injuries when the other team had eight key players out and they dominated the game in a lopsided fashion. That points to deeper problems than just injuries.
Dan, do you think tanking is gaining traction as a concept in the NFL? I can imagine, maybe we talked about it years ago for some reason, just like dismissing it out of hand. People like to do that with the NFL. We would have it in hockey or other sports. And with football, you tended to get, yeah, it would never happen in football. Do you think that's changing?
Well, you know, right before I came on with you, I was listening in my car to Sirius XM NFL Radio, and Jim Miller and Pat Kerwin had on Pete Carroll for his weekly spot. Mm. And he said, I'm looking forward to the game against the Chiefs. He didn't say, I'm looking forward to trying to win the game against the Chiefs. And they deactivated, put three players on IR who were key. There's no question what they're doing with the Las Vegas Raiders. With the Jets, they deny it. Aaron Glenn says every week he's trying to win, but starting Brady Cook at quarterback the last couple of games and going into Buffalo with Brady Cook at quarterback, I think they are tanking. And Bart Scott said on the postgame show on SNY, he said it, and that's the team's media partner. He said once they decided to pull Tyrod Taylor and go with Brady Cook, they're tanking. And that came from a guy that not only works for the team's media partner, SNY, he works for the team's website. He does podcasts with Eric Allen, a Buffalo native, who runs the Jets website. So Bart Scott, who works for the team's website, said on the postgame show they're tanking. And I asked Aaron Glenn today when he said Brady Cook was the starter. I go, does Brady Cook give you the best chance to win? And he looked me in the eye and said, Brady Cook gives us the best chance to win. I'm not putting Tyrod Taylor in Canton, but there is no way on earth Brady Cook gives them a better chance to win than Tyrod Taylor. There's no way. Brady Cook was an undrafted free agent out of Missouri where he was an average player. He is a great kid. I think he won SEC Academic Player of the Year 3 years in a row.
Wow.
Great, great young man, very smart, but very smart. We've had this discussion before about quarterbacks that went through Buffalo probably before Josh Allen, Jets quarterbacks. You could be extremely bright in school. You could be extremely bright in a regular job. But I'm telling you, this whole thing of processing defenses, that, and Mike, you're a very bright guy in your own regard, and you know there's different types of intelligence. Being very smart, you could be a 4.0 student, you could be a world-famous brain surgeon, you might not be able to read defenses. It's a totally different thing. And Brady Cook is extremely bright. He's checking down to running backs down 42-10. He's just not seeing it downfield.
There's a lot I can do mentally. I just don't watch me try to fold a bed sheet. It's impossible.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody's got their mental acuity that applies to certain areas.
Yes. I remember taking a test very young in school, like maybe third grade. They're trying to figure out what you're good at. And I got like all these high scores. And there was one category, Dan, called spatial relations. And I got a 35. Like it's 99, 99, 99, 35.
Yeah, and I always try to explain to Mike, to people, Mike, that, and they just don't get it. They're like, I'll say a certain quarterback over the years, he's not good at processing, going through his progressions. That's coaching. I go, no, it's not coaching. Tom Brady was so unbelievable at it as far as seeing everything. There's so much going on at the same time. You got two edge rushers trying to take your head off. You got the defense. Look, is showing you one look before the snap and then changing it after the snap. If you're on the road, you can't even hear yourself think. Like, it's really hard, and most humans can't do it well.
Dan, a few more minutes. Do you think Aaron Glenn deserves a second season?
Well, I've made it a philosophy over the years, a policy that I don't fire coaches or GMs or cut players. I try to avoid that. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say whether he deserves it, but when Albert Breer had a big story today in SI that he's definitely coming back, he said in the story there was never even a consideration of firing after 1 year, and I find that odd. Yeah. Once again, I'm not saying he should be fired, but when you see what we've seen, how is that not even in the conversation? Once again, not saying it should happen, but there's something wrong with the process. If you look at what we've looked at and not even bring it up, you could dismiss it, but you got to have it when you're talking around the table. He's got to make major staff changes. They have 4 picks in the first 2 rounds. He's got to nail those. I just don't think that the ownership, Woody Johnson and his right-hand man, Ira Axelrad, and his other right-hand man, Jaime Elhai, I don't think they were ever going to eat about $50 million in salary for the 4 years left on Aaron Glenn's contract. I just don't think they were inclined to do that. So I don't think they were ever going to fire him. But I'm telling you right now, this is as bad. I tweeted the other day, and I wasn't being hyperbolic. I've covered the Jets almost 30 years. This is the worst defense I've ever seen of all my years covering the team. Wow. And this is a coach who made his bones as a defensive coordinator, right, before that a secondary coach, and he was a really good corner in the league. The strange thing about the defense is Aaron Glenn gets the job, and he hires Steve Wilks to run his defense, who he doesn't have a background with and doesn't run the same system. Have you ever seen a coach? Now, Sean McDermott can have Bobby Babbage, but it's Sean McDermott's system. It's a very strange situation where you hire a guy you didn't work with before, you throw him the car keys to run your defense when you made your bones as a defensive coordinator, and you let him run his defense. Mike, does that seem odd to you?
Yes. And by the way, you picked out one of my favorite little gems, too, in reporting. Because they always say that, right, Dan? They always say they wouldn't even have thought of it. No way. Like, they're always, teams are always defiant to the question of whether they're going to fire a coach or, you know, move on from a player that they plan to keep. Like, we haven't even, who would even think of that? Teams are, because what does it sound like in the middle? You know, we had some long, hard discussions, but we're deciding to keep going with them. They don't want to sound like that either. So, yeah, it's laughable when it comes out that way, I think. I don't know if you're saying the same thing, but...
No, I just, once again, I want to be careful with my words here. I'm not saying he should be fired. I don't do that. But if you're discussing how this season has evolved and what we've seen out there, especially over the last month with a historic stretch of getting blown out, the conversation has to go on at the table. It doesn't mean you have to do it. But to say it never crossed your mind seems a little odd to me.
Sure. No. I think it should happen here. I mean, after any of these recent seasons, even though it might be not even close to happening, a coaching change, I mean, at least you talk about it. So that seems right to me. How about the Bills for you, Dan? So you know the season that's happened. It's looking pretty wide open in really both conferences. I think the national narrative on the Bills is going to be, if not now, when? Right? No Kansas City in the playoff picture. But they're also going on the road. How do you like their chances?
Well, I love their chances in the AFC. I think that situation with the Chargers and their offensive tackles is a big problem, even though Herbert is making the best of it. I mean, they're two stud tackles. I mean, these are two first-round picks who are really good. They're both out for the year, as you know. And some of the backups that have been in, like Salyer, who is filling in at left tackle for a couple of weeks, he was hurt last week. So when you have both starting offensive tackles out, it leads to a situation like Justin Herbert's going through. He is getting hit an awful lot. Who knows how sustainable that is? That's one of the reasons he's not playing this week. The winner of the AFC North, I don't think the Bills should be fearful of that team. And New England, we saw in the matchup, New England is doing a nice job. They've got some issues with distractions off the field this week. We'll see. Due process is important. We'll see where those things go. But that can help in terms of distractions. But we saw in that Buffalo game that New England is probably not ready to take out Buffalo in a big game. Maybe they're a year or two away. So I think the path, unless I'm leaving a team out as I'm going through things in my head here, I think the path is pretty clear for Buffalo in the AFC.
Denver?
No. You know, Vic keeps getting on my case because I keep bringing up Bo Nix's playoff game in Buffalo last year. I go, that was an example of the league catching up to a young quarterback's tendencies. And you don't know which Bo Nix you're getting week in, week out. So the defense is really good, but I cannot take Bo Nix in a matchup against Josh Allen. No way.
Very good, Dan. Well, thank you as always for your time. Happy New Year to you. And we'll both be watching here the final game at Highmark Stadium, Jets-Bills.
Yes, we will. Where is the Bulldog? Does he have a gig at a casino with a band?
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly where he is. He always takes this week off. And, you know, in a way, I'm sort of jealous, like my family is out frolicking somewhere. But I also like working this week because of all the playoff stuff, all the speculation. It makes for a really interesting week of sports talk, I think. So I'll take it.
No doubt about it. It is a great sports week.
Thanks again, Dan.
Anytime, Mike.
All right. Thank you. Dan Leberfeld, Jets Confidential. Lines are open for you at 803-0550. I'm wide open today. The stadium, as we send it off after Sunday's game, probably. The matchup with the Jets, sure, but the Jaguars, potentially, or the Patriots. Who do you want? And we've talked some the last couple of days about Keon Coleman not getting to play recently and just whether that will change coming up, whether you think it should. Dalton Kincaid is another one. People are out there making the point that Kincaid is huge to the Bills' chances. And I have not been totally talked into that yet. Anyway, I'm here for it. 803-0550 for your calls. Sal will join me at 5. Yes, Bulldog is off. I expect him back here with me on Friday. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome into a Wednesday edition of One Bills Live. Snow is flying here. Players are inside for a walkthrough practice. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as always. And this week's game against the Jets is presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. Highmark is the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills because life. And as we said, just a walkthrough practice today. They'll get back to more of a traditional practice tomorrow, although this time of year, the pads really aren't going on during the course of the practice week. There's just, you're at the end of the season, a lot of beat up bodies. Don't need to put any more hits on those bodies in the practice setting unnecessarily.
I got to tell you, I remember days like this, and it even walkthrough, it just feels like, oh God, I'm exhausted. Yeah, I mean, it hurts. It's unbelievable.
Got to get your rest this time of year. Stay off your feet as much as you can.
Yeah, that's it. The bye week for the playoff teams is such a huge advantage, and it's just the way it's.
Yeah. A lot of those teams are usually the ones that wind up going to the Super Bowl. It's a big reason why the Chiefs went to, what was it, 5 out of the last 6 Super Bowls?
Yeah, they were really good in the regular season. They found ways to win those games in September and October. Never dropped one.
And we get the bye, and then you only have to win 2 games, both of which are at home.
Yeah.
And you're in the dance.
Yeah.
You know,
And you get that 2-week vacation. You get that from Sunday of one game all the way till Saturday of the next, of 2 games later. It's just, it feels like a month off. It's a huge boost.
Bills practice updates are presented by LECOM, your Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. And there was some interesting news on this front. We won't get to that right off the rip here. We'll just tell you who's participating and not participating. So head coach Sean McDermott provided the update about an hour ago. As we said, it's a walkthrough practice, but those who are not participating today, Josh Allen, Terrell Bernard, who has already been declared out of this game with his calf injury, Joey Bosa, Daquan Jones, Jordan Poyer, and Reggie Gilliam was a new addition due to illness, not an injury. Allen, as we know, has the foot. Bosa has a hamstring. Daquan Jones has a calf, and Poyer has a hamstring. Coach McDermott did say Josh Allen continues to progress in a way that has him in better form than he was last week at this time with the foot ailment, but a decision on his playing time for Sunday has not yet been made. McDermott said Allen's health is their top priority. Limited for practice today, Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, Cam Lewis, Jordan Phillips. Coach McDermott did say that Kincaid is a further ahead this week than he was last week. In other Bills injury news, defensive tackle Ed Oliver, who has been recovering from a torn biceps tendon, had to have his knee scoped after he had a meniscus tear. That procedure took place on Monday. McDermott admitted it has clouded the window for Oliver's return in the postseason, though McDermott said Oliver still has a chance to return to the roster at some point in the playoffs.
How about that? You're out there.
He said it happened during his rehabbing of the biceps.
Obviously, his biceps feeling better. He starts, and we see him out here. He's working out and stuff.
Yeah, we've seen him.
He's running. He's trying to get in game shape when he can't practice. You know what I mean? So they're out here rehabbing him. They say it's rehab, but he's working out trying to get in shape. He's training. And he nicks his meniscus. He's got to get a knee surgery. Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
Now, it's a scope.
Are you serious?
I know.
Come on.
It's a scope. Scopes usually take 2 to 4 weeks from which to recover. We're not going to pretend to know the extent of the scope. Like, is it a major scope? Is it a little cleanup? And usually it takes longer for bigger, heavier players to recover from that. So just hope he can heal quickly. And if he can't play next week, hopefully the Bills can win in advance and they can get him for the divisional round. But I think there was a good chance, absent this knee issue, that he would have been in the lineup next week in the wild card game. Now that seems to be more in doubt. So we'll probably get a clearer picture as to what his availability is going to be come next week, but certainly an unfortunate occurrence here, because they would have welcomed him back to the equation with open arms.
Yeah.
It's funny because I know there's been some critics out there of Greg Rousseau's season talking about, he had more sacks last year and, you know, whatever. And he did. And he had more tackles for loss and more batted passes. one of the reasons why his production is down is because opposing offensive lines don't have to worry about anyone on the interior. And so they can focus their attention on the edges with Bosa and Rousseau because there's no Ed Oliver there.
Ed sprinted out of the blocks this season in those first that first month when he was playing. He was on fire, which is why you really noticed it when he left. And now it took him a while to figure it out and start moving guys in. And, of course, Deion Walker is elevated, and he's gotten better and better and has played very consistently throughout the year. But the guys beside him, Daquan's been in and out of the lineup. Jordan Phillips, now he's in and out of the lineup. You go down the list, T.J. Sanders, Dwayne Carter, we still haven't seen. So, it's just been a total rotating lottery inside of Rousseau and those guys and Joey Bosa as well. And they're just by themselves out there a lot with no guys they haven't been able to get a feel for. So it's been a real – I don't know. I guess I say it's a surprise how well they've been playing defensively these last 3 or 4 weeks.
Pleasant surprise.
A real surprise. I mean, I can't believe the success they had in the second half against Philadelphia. Their run game and that quarterback and that receiver, those receivers.
Oh, it's more than one.
And the tight end.
Yeah.
I was shocked. They're getting it from both ends of the passing game defensively, both up front and in the back end.
And it's largely their 3-3-5 nickel package. They're putting three linebackers on the field in their nickel, and they're using their linebackers as their speed rushers because their speed rushers are on IR. Michael Hoyt, Ed Oliver, they're not available. So they've made do with what they have, and I think Babich and McDermott have very keenly deployed their linebackers as pass rushers, chiefly Dorian Williams and Matt Milano, and they've been great. They've been downright great. And their scheming has been outstanding. They're not only deploying linebackers in a different way to augment their pass rush, they're doing it in such a way that has quarterbacks completely crossed up. Jalen Hurts didn't know what was coming at him in the second half. He had no clue and looked very much like Drake May did 3 weeks ago. Yeah. Drake May in the second half, that's as indecisive as I have ever seen him since he's been in the NFL. He had no idea what he was looking at.
Yeah.
And he was patting the ball.
That led to the 21-point turnaround and gave the Bills the ability to get back in it because they could hold the Patriots off the board so that while the offense got their feet under them. So
it's encouraging.
It is encouraging. And so that's why, you'd love to see Ed parachute back in there.
Yeah.
But, at the beginning of the year, a lot of people, and you and I included, had this thing, I just hope Bosa can stay healthy because that was, I don't know.
Yeah.
And now here we are, week 18 coming into it. Guy's been there every week.
Can we knock on wood right now?
Yeah. I mean, but still, it's the unpredictable nature of the beast.
I'm just, for a unit that has been short on manpower the entire season, once again, Sean McDermott and his defensive coordinator, Bobby Babich, have done more with less. They just flat out have. I mean, you're going to get to the end of the season, and they're going to flirt with being a top 10 defense. That's insane.
Yeah. That's
a top 10 defense, this group.
When it's all over, you're going to wonder, gosh, what could have happened if they just
playing a first-place schedule.
If Mike Hoyt and Ed stay healthy with the development of Deion Walker and all those guys and Daquan in there, you'd love to have seen what it could have happened, how it could have happened. If Max Hairston could have gotten on the field instead of waiting 6 weeks,
Bishop's
or 7
maturity.
Weeks. Bishop matured fast. Jordan Poyer really helped settle those guys down. And Shaq Thompson, what a find he has been. So it's been, when you look back at it, it seems like it was fun. Although we're sitting over here, we're all pulling our hair out over the deal. But it's been fun watching them figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, all right, Shaq, you're up.
And not just hold the fort, but progress into a unit that's making plays and getting off the field. They're not getting turnovers like they did last year, but they're getting off the field.
This is what it's going to happen. They're going to go to win the Super Bowl, and the offense is going to score 10 points a game. They're going to win it with defense after this
year. I don't know if I'm ready for that far.
But. Oh, man. How uncomfortable would that be?
Oh, I would.
It'd be awesome, but oh my gosh, could you imagine the angst of watching that happen?
The 18 hairs I have left.
Bills fans.
just would be, we'd be beside ourselves. Can you imagine after watching this team for the last 5 years and then having them go and win a defensive struggle throughout the playoffs all the way to the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl like 9-6. Oh.
I'll sign up for it if we're winning.
Oh, just. Oh,
I'll sign up for it. I'll take the years off my ticker if that's what the outcome is.
Oh, yeah. You can't even enjoy those games.
As long as it ends the right way, I'll deal with it.
You gotta have a barf bag sitting next to you the entire month of the playoffs. Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Oh, okay.
Let's go around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. Jets head coach Aaron Glenn confirmed that he is again starting Brady Cook at quarterback on Sunday against the Bills. He also said that tight end Mason Taylor, offensive lineman Xavier Newman and Joe Tippmann, along with running back Isaiah Davis and Breece Hall, along with cornerback Quantez Stiggers, will not practice today. So we'll see what the ultimate decision is for Coach McDermott as to whether or not he's going to sit down any frontline players for this game. The Bills, as we know, can still improve their playoff seeding with a victory and some help. So if you want to argue incentive, that's fine. I was encouraged to hear Coach McDermott say, you know, Josh Allen's health is our top priority. So I would tend to think by the time we get to week's end, there's a good chance that Josh comes out for the first snap to keep his consecutive game started streak intact and then exits, much like he did in week 18 last year. Although last year there really wasn't anything for them to gain, if I remember right, because they were already division champs. And I don't think there was a way they could improve their seeding last year. So
that's right. They were locked in at the
two.
Yeah, that's right. The two or something like that.
Two or the three.
Yeah.
So this year they can improve their seeding. I wonder if that changes the conversation. I think the most interesting playing time conversation is going to be about James Cook, who currently has the NFL rushing lead, but is only 47 yards ahead of Jonathan Taylor. So I think that's going to be a difficult one to navigate, because knowing the competitor that James is and all the work he's put in to have a career best season,
well,
finishing with the rushing title would be nice, but what would be nicer is to know that he's healthy for the playoffs. He's a key cog.
Indianapolis will be done with their game when the Bills play.
That's a good point. So you'll know exactly how much he needs.
Yeah. That's a plus.
Although Derrick Henry is only 137 yards behind as well.
Right. But if he does, you know, like, if James goes out and gets 60.
Should be enough.
You'd think, but you never know. And I guess the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, you got to think that's going to be a tough game in Pittsburgh. I don't know. But, yeah, all this stuff goes into the stew, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to give James every opportunity to have that on his resume, who have led the National Football League in rushing. And listen, 1606 he's got now. That's a big season.
Mm-hmm.
That is a powerful.
It's the third best rushing season in Bills history.
Yeah, in any room you go into, there can't be more than a handful of guys in there who it's possible could be in that conversation.
And I think he's only about 110 yards away from 2,000 all-purpose yards.
Right.
So
you're talking. That's a heck of a small sample size right there. That's elite company, and you know, good for him. So, but you'd like to see him do it. But, you know, I mean, we all know the risks.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio
on WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. My head hurts. We just spent the last 30 seconds going through playoff scenarios for the Bills. Sal Capaccio here on the Western Hotline.
And then
Sal,
I threw a fifth one in there to cause migraines for both of us.
I think we got to the point where the only team the Bills can't play in the wild card round is the Chargers. I'm not 100% sure on that. Again, my head hurts. How you doing?
Ooh. It's good. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you guys. Yeah, I think that's right.
I think that's right.
I drew up the literal only scenario, Sal, and it's this. The Bills have to win. Chargers lose. Texans win. Jaguars lose. Texans move to the 3. Bills move to the 6. It's the only way they could face the Texans. I need a Tylenol.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, that's right. That's right. They could still play Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They could play anybody.
They could still play New England at Jacksonville. So right now the odds are most likely at Jacksonville, second most likely at New England. And then a whole bunch of other things are kind of up in the air. I think Denver would probably fall next, but it could still be Pittsburgh or, you know, Baltimore.
Yeah.
Now, I think that most conventional wisdom Bills fans, not everybody agrees with this, would say you don't want Houston, you don't want Baltimore, right? For two different reasons. Houston because of their pass rush, Baltimore because of their run game. There's no doubt about that. Houston, as you said, it would take a bit to get there because I would think Jacksonville is going – They're going to try and win the division. They're going to try and beat Indy. They're going to finish as the 3.
And but they're facing can Tennessee.
Tennessee.
They're facing Tennessee.
And Houston's facing Indy. That's right.
Yep.
Okay, so you probably think Jacksonville wins that, but weirder things have happened. Look at Atlanta against the Rams the other night, right? I mean, weirder things have happened. Okay, so then you have, if Houston sees that happening, here's the thing, though. If Houston sees at 1 o'clock that Jacksonville has things in hand, does Houston start to pull their starters? All of a sudden, they lose because of it. Chargers are already resting their guys. We know that.
Yep.
I could see a scenario where the Bills jump into the 5.
Oh, I could too. And Sal, kind of a fun thing for Bills fans as well. For the most part, we will know what the Bills need to do and where they can go because they're the 4:25 game. And most of these games that we'll keep an eye on are the 1 o'clock ones, obviously outside of the AFC North matchup for Sunday Night Football.
That's right. So what's interesting is, and I don't think you can tell, if the Bills, when the Bills go out to play the Jets, I think we'll talk about this. I think they're going to treat it like they want to give guys rest, but they want to win the game. It's the last game in Highmark, and the guys who go out there, they're trying to win the game for sure. So if Mitch Trubisky's out there for most of the game, and he's looking to throw touchdown passes, no doubt. So I think you're trying to win the game. I think what happens then is if you win and you know that win gets you to the 5, well, then we all become big Pittsburgh Steelers fans, I guess, right? I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
On Sunday night, because you wouldn't know your opponent till Sunday night, though, if that happens. That's the issue.
Yeah, it's good. That's where I'm excited for Sunday, because, Sal, I'm right there with you. I think the Bills are going to, for the most part, treat this as they can rest guys. Now, it's not a preseason game. They're not going to have 90 guys on the roster. They're going to have to kind of, play a little bit with the roster. We all look at Allen, but does not mean the entire offensive line is going to get changed out. It could, but does not mean it can. But that is going to be something to keep an eye on. And, Sal, I do wonder, on a Wednesday, sitting here now, who do you want the Bills to go play? Like, who is the team you want to see them the most go to?
I don't know. I go back and forth between New England and Jacksonville. I really do. There's different reasons for both, which is I think you feel they can really match up with New England, and they're not super explosive like on the outside without Mac Hollins, but they have Drake May, and he's amazing. And Drake May he deserves every bit of the MVP love he's getting. There's no doubt about it. They don't have this incredible run game, but they can rip off explosive runs, and they play good sound defense, but it's not like something like you see in Houston, right? Okay, so that's that. But guys, I just can't stomach the thought of going there and losing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just it's in my brain. I mean, you lose in any game, it's tough, but you go there and lose after the reign that they had, then you took them over, and then they have Drake May, they win the division. That there also is a great thought of go there and beat them and say, who cares about your division?
That's where I'm at, Sal. Like I know Jacksonville's the most likely, but in my head, I'm like, you know what? Let them have the AFC East. We've gotten it 5 years in a row. Maybe you need a little, humble yourself and then just go back there, beat them again and be like, cool, have the MVP, have the division.
Yeah.
You didn't even win a playoff game. Good for you. I need that a little bit in my body. I know Jacksonville's likely, but
I know Jacksonville is like this really scary monster right now, like the way they're playing. Like that's the other part. Like everybody says, look how they're playing. That's real. I mean, they have just been putting it on teams lately, and good teams. I mean, they scored 34 against the Broncos defense, right? I mean, like, they put it on good team. They scored 35 against the Chargers defense. I also know that, like, they've also had moments this year, and they're on a roll right now, but that doesn't have to stay. Last week, they struggled a bit. They finally came back. They beat Indy. I also think that, you know, you look at them, they are very good against the run. They're not a huge, great pass rush team, but their pass defense is good. Like, they get interceptions. They can take the ball away. If you go down to Florida, you have good conditions. I don't know. I think the Bills, I give the Bills a good chance there because I think it's a quarterback they've faced. And I know they've lost to Trevor Lawrence. I get it. It's a quarterback they've faced. They've seen him. It's a first-time head coach. So there's a lot that goes into all this, you know?
There's a lot to go into everything about this season, Sal, especially with how crazy it has been. We've talked about this how many times throughout the season, Sal. The Bills could absolutely run through the AFC because everyone's got questions this time around. But when it comes to the Bills themselves, they are a team that we saw the worst of it this past weekend when they score 12 points. It's frustrating how the offense can't get things done and at least finish it off. But here you are once again. The Bills have one of the highest ceilings, I should say, of anybody in the National Football League, and here they are sitting playing on the road.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the debate is, and I think this is a really like good exercise, is it better to have Kansas City and Cincinnati and maybe even the Ravens, who knows now, out of the way versus going on the road three straight games? I don't know. I think going on the road three straight games is tough. It's really tough. I think it's tough in the regular season. Now you're placing good teams in the playoffs. That's all, you know, there's something about playing at home here in Buffalo and people coming here, the mental aspect of it, going on the road is tough. So, yeah, I think it's a very, very tough proposition. In a vacuum, the Bills can win any week against any of these teams. They can also lose any week against any of these teams. I'd like their chances a lot more if they're at home because we've seen them on the road this year just be very Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, absolutely. Sal Capaccio here on the Wester Hotline. Sal, the Bills are getting back to practice today. We have mentioned it already. This kind of might be a little bit closer to a preseason game than a regular season game. But, of course, always injuries to keep an eye on, especially late in the year. Dalton Kincaid, really, I think, chief among them.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's two parts of this week's injury report. Number one is, how are guys trending at practice? And number two is, what will the team do Sunday with them, even if they are trending to play? Because I think if anybody is notable that's, you know, getting there, you might just back off on him anyway. And I think Dalton Kincaid is first and foremost for this, Zach, which is, if Dalton Kincaid, like, to me, you don't play him this week. There's no reason to.
Right, yeah.
There's no reason at all. You give him another week. I don't think you play Daquan Jones or Jordan Poyer. The guys that have been injured, there's no reason to play them this week. That, to me, the way I look at it. Now, if they're super healthy and they want to get a few reps in, that's, you know, that's how the team has to decide it, with the medical staff, with the player, with the coaching staff. But I just think that you go into this game with anybody who is, here's how you start. Everybody says, who are they going to rest? Who are they not going to rest? Are they going to rest players? The first thing you do if you're Sean McDermott is you go to who's injured. And that's how you have to start with who should rest and who shouldn't. All the other stuff about, well, back off this guy, give him some rest, You got to decide first who's banged up that has to sit out, because there's only so many spots you can not play people. Everybody else has to play. You only get 48 guys to dress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you have a preseason roster at your disposal. You don't. You get two elevations. Four guys are out of elevations. It's not easy to do. So I think the first thing you do is you look at who's been injured. Dalton Kincaid, Daquan Jones, Jordan Poyer, Matt Prater, all these people. Terrell Bernard, we already know, is out for the game. That's where you start with, what should we do? And then you get to Josh Allen, of course. We know that he's healthy enough to play. But to me, he starts. He gets his starting streak to continue. And then you get him out of there very quickly.
So because you can't sit everybody, this isn't a college roster. You only have the 53 and actually the game day 45. I would imagine that James
48.
Cook. Oh, 48. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
Yep.
But I would imagine, though, that James Cook probably gets some run here against the Jets. They'll see and they'll know entering that game just how much he needs to get in order to get past Jonathan Taylor and how much he would have to play. Obviously, Derrick Henry could sneak up and steal it in Sunday Night Football, but I don't think they're going to really account for that. But James Cook, I would imagine, probably gets some run here against the Jets.
I think this depends a little bit on what happens with Jonathan Taylor at 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So Jonathan Taylor's 47 yards behind James Cook. If Jonathan Taylor passes James Cook, I fully expect James Cook to play enough to pass him. Like, James Cook has said, he didn't say this to me. I heard the TV broadcast a few weeks ago when they did a TV production meeting. They asked him, I think it was maybe Ian Eagle and JJ, like, is the rushing title important to you? He said, yes, it's important to him. It's important to his family. And I think it's important to the Bills and their organization. Like, of course, the Bills, you know, the last time, you guys know the last time, last time that a rushing title leader was in the 70s, right? That was OJ.
It was OJ, yeah.
But the last time they led the league in rushing, by the way, I looked it up, it was 2016 with LeSean.
Okay.
They led the league in yards per game. They have a chance to do that too. But I think it's important to the Bills. I think it's important to James Cook. What did they do last year, week 18? The game meant nothing. They pulled James Cook out. They get to the goal line. They put him back in just so he can get the rushing TD record.
Right, exactly.
That's right.
So like they've shown that when guys are going for stuff, they're not going to just pull back, right? And I do that, like that.
They've always kind of tried to do right, if you will, by the guys. You remember a few years ago, they tried to get another touchdown pass to like another guy to have that the number of touchdown passes to different players, right? Like these are things that they'll be cognizant of, but you have to thread the needle of at what point do you put a player at risk and you don't want to do that. Because you also have to remember, even if, let's just say Jonathan Taylor runs for 70 yards, James Cook needs 30 or 40 yards. He goes out there and gets it. Well, you also have Derrick Henry right now is 150 behind, and he plays later. So he could catch up, and then I guess you just say, well, if he does, he does, and he has a great game. There's nothing we can do, but I think you treat James Cook depending on what Jonathan Taylor does. The question for me is, if Jonathan Taylor doesn't pass James Cook, does he play at all?
That is exactly what I was thinking of. If the Colts have a bad game, Taylor doesn't do anything, do they just go, all right, Cook, you're not playing. Like, we're rolling with Ty Johnson.
They might. I mean, or he may want to, you know, pad it a little bit before Derrick Henry, and he might want a few reps, you know, just to get, you know, hey, I want to go out there, play the last game in Highmark Stadium. I think all that stuff has to be baked in.
Yeah, absolutely. I selfishly want Cook to get the rushing title because I want to have a conversation in the summer, and I need that rushing title for me to really kind of lean into it. But that is a topic for a few months from now.
Yeah,
Sal,
you got it, buddy.
Another player to kind of keep an eye on, I think, for Bills fans, especially over, I would say, the last 2 months or so, Keon Coleman. He is starting to rack up the healthy and actives. I imagine he will play quite a bit on Sunday just due to the depth and wanting to sit guys. Sal, right now, really, like, where do we sit with Coleman? It's a second year, second round pick for the Bills, but it already feels like it is trending the way of Kyer Elam.
I agree with you. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made in the offseason about this and probably a lot of conversations about it, a lot of evaluation and analysis on all of this. There's so many different variables involved. And, you know, Keon's still a young player, and you hope that he can kind of figure it out a little bit. I think the stuff off the field is leading to the stuff on the field, meaning I don't think they can trust him right now, right? If you can't do the things you're supposed to do off the field, and he's been late, and then he's not producing enough to justify putting him on the field if you can't trust him like that. That's number one. Number two is, though, you get to the offseason, and do you feel that he can take that next step? And you don't just want to, you know, say, okay, we're moving on from this player after 2 years. Kyer Elam, remember, that was the third year. After three years, they moved on from him. And he never had any. Kyer Elam, he was always raved about his work. Kyer Elam was a very hard worker. He just never was good enough to be able to, you know, be on the field enough. And that was just a guy that they drafted that never turned out from that aspect. And I think Keon's a little different here. Now, what's interesting to me, guys, is I think Keon, this is a really great opportunity if they want for him to get on the field. As long as he's doing everything right off the field, you get him on the field this week and say, okay. Remember last year, like, he played a lot against New England. They had a ton of targets. He only caught a couple balls.
Yeah.
Now, Trubisky was the quarterback that day, and it wasn't the best day for everybody offensively. But I think this is the week where maybe you play Keon Coleman and say, show us what you can do if you want us to think about dressing you during the playoffs.
Sal Capaccio here on the Westher Hotline. As it is the final game, at least scheduled, crazy things have happened. They could move up a seed. We can't guarantee it here. But, Sal, with it being what is expected to be the final game at Highmark Stadium, we've been talking a little bit about memories. And, Sal, you've been working on the Bills Radio Network for quite a while now, and I would imagine you have plenty of memories before that as well. What are the ones that really hit home for you about Highmark Stadium?
Well, number one, and I know that it's diverging a bit from kind of how we talk about this, but I got a chance to play there, guys. I played a high school championship game there.
There you go.
And it was amazing. And, you know, I just, like, I remember coming out of the tunnel and seeing the blue and gold, and Zach's also a Cleve Hill alum, right? And seeing the blue and gold out there, and you know, people rooting for it. It was just super cool to come out of the tunnel as a player. It really was, right? As a young kid, I was, 16 years old at the time. So that was awesome. But 2 years before that was my first ever game. It always sticks out to me. It was in the snow against New England. They lost. They had to win the last two games of 87. They didn't. They lost to New England in a low-scoring game. That was my first ever game there, and I remember that. I remember exactly where I sat. Kind of right below where the writer's press box is right now over there on the Bills, the tunnel side in the corner, sat there. And then, listen, nothing will ever top 51-3 to me. I was there. I was a senior in high school. It was 41-3 at halftime. It was a party the entire second half. I mean, you guys remember the perfect game, what that was like. When you just knew, like you knew at halftime, the Bills are rolling in this game. Like there's just, the Patriots dynasty is dead, right? And buried, and the Bills are fine. And like you knew the whole second half to revel in it. That was it going to a Super Bowl. Like you knew the whole second half, we knew this team was going to their first ever Super Bowl. It was amazing, right? That's the best memory I ever have there. Going as a fan, the perfect game is one of them as a broadcaster though. And like as a game itself, as a moment, I mean, Nyheim Hines after DeMar, incredible, absolutely incredible. There's been some great ones over the years. Just for me, just watching and being on the field as Josh Allen and seeing some of the things he does has been amazing. So, you know, walk off field goal against Miami in the snow and snow angels, super cool. The snow game in 2017, all those kinds of things come to mind for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I never played football at Cleve Hill. My brother did, though. He got to do that. He's talked about it being one of those surreal moments. So, absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about, Sal. Just one last thing here before we let you go. Obviously, we're all going to be off tomorrow for the New Year's. Friday, you're going to have Sean McDermott, of course, and then any other schedule bits for fans to keep an eye on the rest of the week.
Yeah, well, they're going to be practicing today and tomorrow like a normal Wednesday and Thursday. But as you said, we won't really have anything on the radio again until Friday when Sean McDermott joins me on the Extra Point Show to give an injury update, and we'll talk about the Jets game and how they're going to handle it. Maybe we'll learn more today. Sean McDermott talks to us in about an hour down at practice, guys.
All right, sounds good. Sal, Happy New Year, man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Happy New Year to you, everybody back at the station, and of course, all of our listeners out there. Thank you so much. Really appreciate everybody listening all year long and into 2026.
Thank you, brother. Thanks, Sal. Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. We'll take a quick timeout, 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to get your favorite stadium memories in as we, at least for us, me and Derek, we wrap up our time here on the show this week. We took some calls in the first segment. We'll keep doing that as we roll along. At 11:30, though, we'll get a little bit of Bandits action going as well. Steve Brumell will join the show. Bandits finally played another game as we're doing this weekly check-in with them. They did win it. We'll get more on that coming up at 11:30. But outside of that, the show is yours. Want to give your memories? We'd love to hear them. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
McCoy breaking a tackle. McCoy into the end zone, and Buffalo wins it. Incredible.
That's a good one. Good one to bring up here. 2017 Bills Colts. The snowiest game the stadium has ever seen. LeSean McCoy in overtime. The snow had stopped falling by then, so you could actually see the play clearly if you were either watching on TV or if you were in the stadium. There was still obviously plenty of snow on the ground because when McCoy was running, I'm pretty sure the snow was still up to his ankles. That's one where I was not there. Joe, were you there? Did you say you had been there?
No, I wasn't there for that one, no.
That was, we weren't there because we got the call, obviously, from our boss. Like, we're going to do everything from the studio today. I mean, the fans were going, but it was so snowy that cars were getting buried while you were in the stadium. It's kind of one of those where I almost feel like you did go because you would wear it like a badge of honor. Like, oh yeah, I was there and I weathered all of that after. That's a good answer for this too. 803-0550 is the phone number. You want to get in line and share some stories about the final week at the stadium and the loudest you ever heard the stadium. We've been doing a little bit of today. You can do that as well. Now though, on the Western Hotline, Joe Marino from Locked On Bills. As the Bills go into week 18, we'll talk about the Eagles game and some playoff matchups too, but Joe, I don't know, you got an answer? What's either your number one memory yourself from being at the stadium or the loudest that you can ever remember it being?
Well, my favorite memory is always going to be my first time going to a Bills game. It was in the mid-90s, December game against the Patriots. The Bills lost the game, but just my first time, you know, in there and got to see Jim Kelly with my own eyes. And remember my dad made us a bunch of sandwiches. They were cold and wet and soggy and nasty, but it was a super cool experience. But I also think my goodbye to Highmark week one against the Ravens.
Yeah.
Really, really cool game to be at. So, you know, that's my favorite game, but certainly the first time in there is my favorite.
That's a good, like, riding off into the sunset game for you and going into that game.
Well, the problem is I was very careful. I was like, well, I want to go to a few more games, but I think this is good. I think I think I'm good here.
Yeah, that's a good one. So, Joe, looking back, we'll get to some playoff stuff. But on the matchup we just saw against Philadelphia, recapping a little bit from your perspective, how much of Sunday's loss to you was squarely on Allen himself making a bunch of errors, including obviously like the obvious one at the end of the game, but even before that, how much do you think it was on Allen on Sunday?
Well, I think a lot of it, probably the leading reason would be why, you know, the turn down that turns into a sack, the failed red zone sequence where they go four and they get to the 7 yard line. They can't score. People forget Josh Allen left that ball behind Khalil Shakir on second down. If that ball's out in front of him, he walks in for a touchdown. He has to reach back and slow his momentum, and he's able to get tackled there. You also can't run the ball on that the James Cook run in that sequence. That you had five to block six. The unblocked guy makes the play. You got to get out of that play. And then in fourth down, I mean, his primary's not available, but then rolling to the right, I mean, you had the check down to Cooks. You had Ty Johnson across the middle of the field. You chose to run the ball and couldn't get in. I mean, that was a huge mistake too. The third and eight sack where he lost 19 yards and kept his eyes on the bunch set and it was never going to uncover. He had Ty Johnson wide open on the check down. He never gets there. It takes a 19-yard loss. And then, of course, not being able to hit that throw to win the game against, you know, in the two-point play. I mean, those are catastrophic mistakes. And foil that against Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts played horribly in the game. But you know what Jalen Hurts didn't do? He didn't make back-breaking mistakes, right? He just threw a bunch of incomplete passes. Josh Allen took five sacks and lost 51 yards. Jalen Hurts took one sack and lost two. I mean, that's what it came down to is sometimes these games in the NFL, I know it's boring to say it, sometimes they're lost more than they're won. And Josh Allen lost the game by the mistakes that he made, and Jalen Hurts didn't make any plays, but he also didn't lose the game, and that's why they were able to get out of there with a one-point win.
Yeah, and it's not like Hurts wasn't under pressure all day, right? Like, how many times he escaped a sack? And a lot of times he did just end up throwing it away, but you're right. Like, he avoided negative plays. Would you also consider the play where Cooks is running a little bit behind the corner and Allen puts it on his outside shoulder instead of his inside a mistake on Allen, or is that one where it's tough to really know kind of who that's on?
Yeah, that's a deep throw down the field. I have plenty of criticism for Josh Allen, but I'm not going to go too hard there. I mean, it's still a player you're developing chemistry. It's a ton of air yards on the throw. It's wet, windy conditions. Like, okay, normal misfire that, you know, you can live with.
Yeah. Are there signs of the Eagles game, the Houston game? Like, these games where Allen's getting hit mostly, and we know he's taking more sacks this year. Does it make you feel any sort of way about specific teams in the playoffs? Like, do you think we have reached a point where we might know what the worst type of matchup is for the Bills offense and what a defense can do to them?
Well, I think you are going to be nervous about teams that can get quick pressure on Josh Allen, of course, especially where Josh Allen has been more big play hunting this year, has had harder times getting out of the pocket to scramble. Yeah, teams that can get that quick pressure and, you know, force him to maybe rush his process or, you know, be a little bit stuck between running or staying in, you know, I think that's going to affect him. So usually those teams struggle to defend the run, so that's kind of a counterpoint to that. So you think about, like, Denver. Certainly I'm concerned about Denver's pass rush, but I think the Bills can run the ball on Denver. You know, there's that give and take to it. But, you know, there's been plenty of times where I've had concerns about things about Josh Allen entering the postseason, but then postseason Josh Allen takes off, right? And he's, I don't know, probably the statistically the best quarterback in NFL history in the playoffs. And, you know, I think that he goes into another stratosphere, and I'm excited to see it this year.
Joe Marino with us on the Wester Hotline. Did you think he looked limited by his right foot injury at all, how much?
Well, the offensive coordinator told you that they were checking in, and it was affecting, you know, their play calling and things that they were doing. And so Josh Allen's never going to tell you that anything is affecting him, ever, right? It's just not in his DNA. Guy had a broken hand in week one last year, and he made it like nothing ever happened, right? And that's just not who he is. And not like Justin Herbert, where everyone's got to know he's got a broken wrist or hand. It's not like Daniel Jones, where everyone's got to know he's got a broken leg. He's not going to give you those excuses. And so you can't listen to Josh when it comes to that stuff. But, you know, I think the offensive coordinator made that pretty clear, that it was something they were having to deal with throughout the course of the game.
One other thing from the offense on Sunday against Philly, how much stock would you take in the game Cooks had? Because even the previous two games, we remember the drops, but he was open. So, yeah. I don't know, do you have optimism right now that he could really give them something as a separator with speed once we get to, especially, you know, the playoff games?
100%, Joe. I mean, you said it. He's been an available target down the field consistently since joining this team. And the issue was just not catching the football. Well, Brandon Cook's a pro receiver. He's been around for a long time. Like, I think you can look at the circumstances of, hey, you're dumped into a new situation late in the season, new quarterback that you never played with. Yeah, you got to kind of get that figured out. And so I think the important takeaway was that he was available down the field. And then we saw that turn into – like amazing catches against the Eagles. And that's something, you know, it's a low bar to clear, but, you know, I think he has elevated the verticality of this passing game. And then even what I really enjoyed was some of the rhythm completions that happened later in the game, just like, hey, drop back passing, outbreaker, get open, catch the ball towards the sideline. Like, that stuff was really refreshing to see. So I do think that Brandon Cooks can help this offense and, you know, low bar to clear, but I'm glad he's here.
On the defense, it was an incredible performance. You mentioned no completions from Jalen Hurts in the second half. How surprised were you that they did have that performance? Because they were missing a lot of bodies.
Yeah, going into the game, I thought the Bills' back seven matched up really well with the Eagles', you know, weapons. And the Eagles are not everybody eats, right? They throw the ball to like four guys. That's it. And I thought Benford was a good answer for Brown. I mean, he had handled Metcalf and Chase and Nico Collins in recent weeks. I thought this was something he would be able to handle. I thought he did a great job. I thought the White-Harrison duo was a good counter for Devonta Smith. The Bills have given up the least catches this year to tight ends across the NFL. And Milano and Bishop, I thought, were good answers for Goddard. The question I had was, could they get enough pressure? Could they scheme up pressure? And I thought McDermott, Babich, you know, they had Nielsen. They had a great plan. Because with Jalen Hurts, he's not one of those quarterbacks where you have to be overly concerned with how you get pressure. You just have to get it, right? You can rush extra bodies. You can blitz. You can do a lot of things. He's not like Joe Burrow, like, oh, blitz Burrow, he's going to kill you. It's not Hurts. And so the Bills did a great job of incorporating DBs, linebackers into the rush plan. You saw multiple pressures from Dorian Williams and Shaq Thompson and Matt Milano and even Taron Johnson. You had safeties. Like, that was a big part of it. Cam Lewis was involved in that plan as well. And so I thought the Bills did a good job of diversifying the rush plan, stunting up front, and then knowing that you had matchups that could work on the back end, despite them being a very talented group of receivers. So I didn't know how the rush plan would come together, especially with some of the injuries at D-tackle. But they came up with the right scheme, executed well, and obviously suffocated that Eagles passing offense.
And then what about the rush defense? They've looked better this year at times when Shaq Thompson's been in there. They held Barkley to under 4 yards a carry. Good sign for them going into the postseason if they were to play another team with a really good running back?
Well, here's the thing. I think the Bills had a great plan to defend the run against Philadelphia, but I don't think it's a translatable plan against other teams. I think Philly had some unique variables with their rushing offense. And I'll start with the right side of their offensive line. Fred Johnson at right tackle is not a starter. And Tyler Seen at right guard is not a good player, right? So you had two below-average players on that right side, and you have a center in Cam Jurgens who's supremely athletic, but he's soft anchor and he's small. And so the Bills, I thought, were very specific to how they attacked that side, that center to right tackle, with a lot of stunts. They would slant, they would do gap exchanges, and that really threw off their timing and was able to get kind of free runners into the backfield. And then you have Saquon Barkley. And Saquon Barkley is as physically dynamic of a running back that has ever come into the NFL. But I've been saying this since Penn State. He's a better athlete than he is football player. He's a guy that has a lot of variance with his runs. He big play hunts with his runs. And he's not a guy that has like a lot of natural feel for navigating congestion around him. And if you can get him to slow his feet in the backfield and stop his surge, you're going to have a lot of success. And the Bills had a very specific game plan to make that happen. You get population of the ball, you get Saquon Barkley down. Now, look, you might be listening to this and thinking, oh, my God, that's criticism for Saquon Barkley. Watch the tape. Realize the way that he plays the game. It's not orthodox. And, of course, he can rush for 2,000 yards in a season because he's a freak show of an athlete. And when he has the offensive line that was in place last year that was blasting open holes, he can hit home runs. But still, there's a snap-to-snap consistency with Saquon. I thought the Bills had the right idea to kind of bring out the worst in his game and really did a great job bottling him up.
Yeah, interesting. Tell me if you think this is wrong. It almost kind of sounds like the way you're laying it out that maybe like the things that make James Cook so good consistently are the things that maybe Barkley is lacking?
Yes. I think James Cook is a guy that understands run concepts, understands his aiming points, and could really navigate and slither and has a really good feel for space. Saquon Barkley is an unbelievable athlete. Like, he doesn't make sense. The build, the power, the explosiveness, but there's still a feel to getting the football, pressing the line of scrimmage, understanding the concept, and then, you know, getting to green grass. And Saquon is a guy that he's more reliant on his physical gifts, right? And so when those tracks that he needs are compromised, you know, it becomes a difficult situation for him. He does stop his feet. He becomes unsure. He becomes undecisive. And you can get tackles for loss. I mean, I think he has the third highest rate of runs in the NFL this year that go for less than a yard, like 25%. The metrics back up what I'm saying. The film backs up what I'm saying. I've been saying this since he's been at Penn State. And so that's what I'm saying about this specific game. The Bills had the right plan to kind of expose that. And, you know, that's why I'm really happy with that defensive run-stopping performance. It's not going to be translatable against other teams. And so I think we celebrate for what it is. You give a hat tip to the coaching staff and say, you know, you did a really good job of figuring out the right plan, especially overcoming no Daquan Jones, and got it done. But I don't know that that's going to translate against other opponents with consistency.
Good stuff. Joe Marino from the Locked On Bills podcast, built Locked On Bills squad show as well with Jeremy White as well throughout the week. So have you thought a lot about potential playoff matchups yet and maybe what you might like or not like? Especially, Joe, it feels like at this point the odds show that Jacksonville is their most likely opponent. There actually is a look-ahead line already at FanDuel. That's their most likely opponent. I think New England is probably second. Do you see a big difference, personally, between Jacksonville, New England? You could throw Denver, Pittsburgh, Baltimore in, but especially Jacksonville and New England.
I feel the most indifferent than I ever have about the path this year. I don't think there's like material differences in all of the possibilities for the Bills. I do find myself preferring New England. Number one, I'd love the opportunity to end their season. You know, that would really kind of nullify their division title. Like, who cares? Oh, you won the East. Well, the Bills ended your season. I want that opportunity. And I think the Bills match up pretty well with New England. I'd like to see it. I'd like to take Josh Allen and the experience of this team into Foxborough and see what that looks like, where, you know, I think Jacksonville is just a little bit more dynamic of an operation. They think they're a little more dynamic at receiver. I think they have more talent in terms of their edge rushers. Their run defense is really good, Jacksonville, but I think you can kind of throw on them. I think one thing about good run defenses is the Bills do have a unique run scheme with the multiplicity with James Cook. So, like, I don't get super nervous about a team being able to completely take away the Bills' rushing offense. So, I mostly want the chance to go play New England, but I do feel like it's probably going to be Jacksonville, and you know, I think that's a unique challenge, and you know, it's going to come down to game plans and coaching, you know, and can the Bills have the right idea and can they have the right call at the right time? It feels like a tough battle this year. Like the overall path seems wide open, but the Bills are going to have to go on the road pretty much probably for the whole thing, and they're 0-5 under McDermott on the road in the playoffs. They're 4-15 as a franchise on the road in the playoffs, so it's an uphill battle, but the Bills are showing up with Josh Allen and more experience than any other team in these playoffs.
So that would, I'm assuming, make it true that you would be with the consensus that there's really nothing worth chasing too hard on Sunday against the Jets. I mean, they might be able to beat the Jets with all of their backups. But who, I guess, comes to mind for you as like priority to make sure that they're resting Sunday? I mean, Allen is obviously top of the list. Is there anybody else that you would think like these are guys that they should prioritize resting?
Well, yeah, first of all, I think it's going to be hard to lose the Jets. It's, you know, I don't think there's a lot of fight in that team, but I'm not as like totally on board with sitting Allen. I think this offense has had massive execution issues the last 2 weeks against Cleveland and Philly, whether that's protection issues, drops, missed reads, missed throws. I'd love for them to play a little bit and find some rhythm going into the postseason, even if it is against the Jets. I just don't like the way this offense is playing right now. So I'd be willing to play them for a few series. When it comes to the players that I think are priorities to sit, I think they're mostly defensive players. Matt Milano, Jordan Poyer, Christian Benford, Joey Bosa, Daquan Jones. Don't need to see those players on Sunday. And then offensively, I would sit Dalton Kincaid. I would sit Spencer Brown, make sure that those guys are ready to go for the playoffs. But I'd like to see Josh play a little bit and find some rhythm. And get that 40th touchdown, maybe give James Cook a few carries to make sure he gets that rushing title. But, you know, I think most of the rest needs to happen on defense because, I mean, how many times have we gone through these playoffs? No Matt Milano, Christian Benford's injured in an elimination game. And Bosa, his availability in the playoffs has always been the concern. Like, oh, you're here, let's go. Poyer's playing through a hamstring or has a hamstring deal. Daquan Jones with a calf. Give these guys the rest. Get that offense humming a little bit and give yourself a chance to have some momentum. That's the way I see it. I know many people will disagree with that, but I don't know. Football players play football. So I want to see these guys go out there and find some momentum going into the postseason on the offensive side of the football.
Joe Marino from the Locked On Bills podcast. Herd Mentality. You can find the link to the Substack and subtext and more on his website, thejoemarino.com. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk in 2026.
All right, guys. Thank you, and go Sabres.
Go Sabres, 10 in a row tonight, maybe? We'll see. 8 o'clock tonight. Thanks to Joe for his time with us. The Sabres playing the Dallas Stars. They are as big an underdog tonight as they have been this entire streak, which shouldn't come as that big a surprise. Dallas is the best team on paper, and you're on the road. They didn't play last night, right? So they're not coming off a back-to-back, so you don't have that benefit. Let me check out really quickly here. What about the goaltending for Dallas? Could we see a backup tonight? Because Jake Oettinger is great, although now that I'm looking, Casey DeSmith is also having a very good season statistically. So maybe it's not the biggest benefit in the world, even if he does sit.
Yeah, DeSmith's having a year. I mean, Dallas creates a really easy environment for their guys, so yeah, that helps with DeSmith especially. But he's hot right now, so you're facing a guy that's feeling good either way. I would obviously feel a lot better not seeing Jake Oettinger, because I think he's one of the best young goalies in the league. If we do get to see him, I'm excited because I get to watch him play because he's awesome.
Yeah.
We'll see.
They play tomorrow night also. So they play tomorrow
who
night
do they play?
In Chicago. If I were Dallas, who's the stronger challenge right now? It's obviously...
It's the Sabres.
Sabres on a 9-game win streak.
Yeah.
Although you're on the road in Chicago.
Chicago's sliding, though. They don't have Bedard. They don't have Nazar. Like, I think you're getting Oettinger tonight.
All right, let me get to a place where I'm the Dallas coach and I'm playing the backup tonight against Buffalo. The reason I would do that is I know tomorrow is going to be the second of a back-to-back, and I'm traveling in between. And what's Dallas to Chicago is a flight. It's not an hour, right?
No, it's like maybe 2.5, 3.
All right. So I'm going on the road, back to back. I'm thinking tomorrow maybe my team doesn't have as many legs as I need. Okay. So tomorrow's when I want Ottinger because I'm going to need goalie more than I need it tonight.
Right.
There we go. There's an argument for why the Sabres could see a backup tonight.
I can be okay with that.
DeSmith, by the way, is goal saved above expected on the season out of like 80 goalies is the 16th best on the season.
Right.
So he's been pretty darn good.
Speaks to what
Ottinger ninth.
Right. Ottinger's a stud. He's a stud through and through. I am a USA goaltender. Crease is a powerhouse.
Yeah.
Hellebuck, Ottinger, you've got guys left and right. It's awesome.
Hellebuck's still the starter though, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I remember right after the playoffs, who had it? Maybe it was Friedman. One of the big hockey podcasts had a spirited debate about if Team USA is going to take into consideration that Connor Hellebuck stinks in big games in the postseason as a reason to go with Ottinger in the playoff, to go in the Olympics.
Right.
Although Ottinger didn't play well in the playoffs last year either, right?
Yeah, no.
So maybe that doesn't end up being a thing.
He got yanked and got his coach fired.
All right. Right. That's right. Him and the coach.
That's what happened to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I. If you're not – you give Hellebuck the first three and go –
Yep.
If you suck after three, like, all right, we'll pivot. But, like, Hellebuck's your guy. He's got to be. He's a witch. He plays the position unlike anybody else in the world. That's part of why he's so good. And he plays it almost better than anyone else consistently. So
Sabres and Stars tonight. Dallas has lost two in a row. They've lost two in a row to Chicago and Detroit. Now, they were both in overtime. One was in a shootout. They're still a great team.
Yeah, they don't lose a lot.
8 o'clock tonight, going for 10 in a row, which would give you a game in Columbus to go for the franchise record if they're able to get the win tonight. 803-0550 is the phone number. The loudest you've ever heard the stadium. What do you got? What's number one? We've had 51-3 thrown out there. We've had the Bills Dolphins game from a couple years ago where they won 48-20, the perfect game, and the comeback game, of course. A lot of recommendations so far for what might have been the loudest that stadium's ever been. Your phone calls next, 803-0550. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. Joe Kelly and Owen Parker hanging out as well here on
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WGR.
On defense in particular, they need probably 6 or 7 new starters, and I'm not embellishing. There are players that probably wouldn't be on other teams in certain cases. There are players that make the same mistakes over and over again. And a couple of them aren't even rookies or undrafted guys. The two inside linebackers continue to not read their keys properly in coverage. Jamien Sherwood and Quincy Williams. Out of position all the time. ATN beat Quincy Williams on all three touchdown catches.
Dan Leberfeld, just before, talking about the Jets' woes. Maybe it's a low point. I don't know. It is relatable. With the Bills in recent years, we haven't been in this category, but certainly the Sabres have. And before McDermott and Allen, the Bills were. That you already know that. And it gets really, it's frustrating. It's sad. It's a lot of things. Gets really twisted too sometimes trying to decide what you want. I mean, you kind of, not everybody would. This was a huge point of contention with the Sabres at one time, but I don't know. I'm the type that would want them to lose. Better draft pick, simple. What is this good for? Winning late season games, you know, that really don't help me in any meaningful way. Of course, I recognize and did then and always have that the players have a different incentive than management would, but it gets to be that time of year where a bad team might as well just keep losing. It's better off. And that's no fun, right? We've been all over that over the years. Sort of whether that's respectable or I don't really care if it's respectable. I just want the better value. So that gets weird and also frustrating. Just, you know, I think the Jets are this. I think the Sabres have been this. Maybe that has changed or is changing. But you've got to show like you're a serious organization. And there are certain things both teams have done that, to say the least, really make you question that. Teenagers deciding on players because of their Madden ratings, for one. That's the Jets. And, you know, with the Sabres and Kevin Adams going into year six and I guess even getting a new contract after five straight misses in the playoffs, I mean, it's unheard of. So I was on in Toronto yesterday, 10:50 in Toronto, and we were talking about this. And one of the hosts is Carlo Colaiacovo, who played for the Sabres and the Leafs. And did that sound like I was putting him down for having played for the Leafs? I wasn't. Just, you know, to tell you a little bit more about him. But, I mean, I said it's interesting when you're talking to an actual NHL player. Look, I don't know how these guys think, but it seems logical to me that if you're going along in an organization that just seems in different ways to be less than financially, whatever it is, facilities, can take on all kinds of different forms, you're at risk of getting less out of your team because you might just not get the buy-in in the other direction. So then, I mean, that's what talking to Dan Lieberfeld reminded me of with the Jets is he asked me, like, I always like that about Dan because he'll ask us questions. Like, does it make sense to you that these guys, they played zone in college, that they can't even understand basic zone defense concepts? Like, well, no, but if they're going through the motions on a team, by the way, whose season is long over, and they don't really take seriously the possibility of their getting good, which could be true. I mean, wouldn't that seem normal? Then you're not going to get, you know, just logically, you wouldn't expect to get the very best out of your players. So maybe then it makes sense. Well, it's not our problem anymore, at least when it comes to the Bills. Maybe it's not with the Sabres either. We'll see. They can't lose. It's 9 straight wins. Dallas tonight. 803-0550 for your calls. A big topic on Sunday's game. Of course, it's the end of the stadium, and we've talked a lot about that and look forward to doing more of that. Sal will join me at 5. One thing, if they are going to rest starters, and, you know, we've all made the point that, unlike in the preseason, I mean, you can't rest them all. You only have room for so many, and maybe that's a half dozen players or so who don't get much playing time, if any, on Sunday. But it's not going to be everybody. An interesting one is James Cook, who leads the league in rushing. And if the Bills, and I expect that they would have this incentive, want to get him the rushing title, I don't see that as one of the bonuses, by the way, leading the NFL in rushing. I don't think that's in play for Cook. But if the Bills were to go for that, so Jonathan Taylor is second, and I think it's 48 yards behind. I have it written down somewhere. 47. Hear that paper? That's me looking for it in my notes. I had it written down. So Cook is up by 47 yards. Taylor for Indianapolis plays at 1 against Houston. And so the Bills will know, maybe he won't even get to 47 yards and you won't have to worry about it. But if Taylor goes for a certain number, then it might be interesting how important it is to the Bills to get the not the record, but to get the rushing title. Like, where is that line? I mean, you could have it be any number and Cook starts the game and you just hope he breaks one and puts it away. Probably by that, if it's Jonathan Taylor and Cook, that would be, you know, that would be it. Derrick Henry plays Sunday night. He's farther behind. He could have another amazing game and then maybe he steals the show. But really, you're shooting for beating Jonathan Taylor out for this. And, you know, if you get a big hit from Cook early in the game, then maybe you're all set. It's different, though, I think, than last year, because it was a similar situation when the Bills went to New England. And what they wanted for Cook was a touchdown to get him the franchise touchdown record. So they got down there and put him in. He got stopped and left him in, and he scored, and that was it. They didn't have to, you know, pile up yards or anything for him. The goal was the touchdown. That was the point. And then he came out, and that was it. This game, if the Bills take Allen out, I wouldn't expect their offense to look good. Like, maybe the Jets are so bad that it will. But I think you could have more like last year's game in New England, a game where they really just don't get first downs and move the ball, in which case Cook might have a tough time getting to the rushing lead. And at what point would the Bills pull the plug on that? Like, if Taylor goes for 90 or something, which, you know, it could easily happen. It's Jonathan Taylor. If he has the kind of game where, say, Cook needs 50 yards to win the rushing title, and it's a slow start, and you want to take Allen out, so you do that. I mean, do you just leave James Cook in no matter what? I would think the Jets would have maybe this one incentive defensively on Sunday would be to deny him that. I don't know what else there is other than just sort of basic stuff like winning the game, whatever. But it might be, he might be a marked man, especially with Allen out. So then I think you have to be ready. You have to draw a line somewhere. I think you would probably do this, not just leave him in at all costs. Because then you're completely defeating the purpose of taking guys out in the first place. I assume they think he's important. And if you're leaving him in, I don't expect this. But if you're well into the game and he can't get his 50 yards or whatever he might need, and you're just sort of, you know, throwing him into the wall play after play, hoping to get to that number, that's really defeats the purpose of the resting players in the first place. Because not only are you not resting him, you're kind of wearing him out in a meaningless game. I mean, that's, or close to a meaningless game. That's not what you want. So I wonder if there's a number, if they don't get, like, if he goes into the game behind and he doesn't pop one early-ish in this game to settle it, would they just kind of keep feeding him until he does? See what that looks like. We might, anyway, see what that looks like on Sunday. Is it meaningless to you? I don't mean the stadium either. I don't mean that piece. Is it meaningless to you? You got a chance for a 6 seed or even a 5 with a win. And yes, it is the Jets. The Bills are favored by 7. I think if it were expected that everybody plays like the game were more important to the Bills, that number would be double that. I mean, the Patriots were, I think, a 12.5-point favorite. I should know because I had the Jets. A 12.5-point favorite last week on the road against this team. What would the Bills be at home if you felt that they were going all out to win? It might be 14, might be more. Why wouldn't it be even more than that? Possibly, but it's not. It's 7. So that's been my, you know, my light on sort of how to look at this game. I think if that line is going to be 7, then people don't expect the Bills' top players to play very much, if at all. Otherwise, come on, 7 against the Jets? I don't think I'll be betting it. I do have limits. And week 18 is kind of my limit. I mean, I say that now. Who knows on Sunday at noon if I'll get an itch. But week 18 is a tough sledding. Do you play fantasy football in week 18? That is hardcore. A few years ago, I joined a league that played week 18 for the championship, and I didn't know it when I agreed to play in the league. Friend of a friend, you know, asked me to do it, and okay, I like a challenge, different guys, sure. And I found out later that they play the championship game in week 18, and I don't remember making it to the finals, but I just remember thinking, oh, this is the worst. It's bad enough when it's week 17, which is when almost all leagues finish up, and you've got players like Rashee Rice might be a good example of this. I mean, he was concussed, but teams that just don't have any incentive to win left, and they shut down their best players. Garrett Wilson with the Jets, although that was longer ago. Players like that, where they just don't play because their team is bad. The situation is so bad. And in fantasy, you just have to live with it. But week 18, when kind of everybody sits. Just imagine what, think of your best or your one fantasy lineup and what it might look like this week. Sure, like if you have Christian McCaffrey, he plays, but you can't really start Allen, I think. Who's your quarterback this week? Maybe you have Burrow, that would be good. If you've got Justin Herbert, no. Any of these top AFC team quarterbacks could come out. Jalen Hurts might sit. I think he sits for at least some of that game for Philadelphia. Just so many of your options are not available. That doesn't really seem... It makes sense to me why we don't play fantasy in Week 18. If you do, that's pretty crazy. I want to say good for you because it's different and maybe a little bit brave, but I don't know. I got right out of that league. I do not want to be in a league that has all the money come down to this week's games. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. Lines are open for you, 803-0550. It is New Year's Eve. Thanks for listening. Bulldog is off today. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.